Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to February's Small Animal Practice Club webinar. I'm delighted to introduce to you our speaker for today, European and RCVS veterinary specialist in soft tissue surgery, Daniela Mergia. Thank you, Daniela. I'm now going to hand over to you.
Thank you very much for your introduction. Good afternoon to everybody. So the lecture of today is about urethral disease of surgical interest in dogs and cats, and where are we now? So if you look at urethral diseases in general in dogs and cats, these can be classified in three main groups, which you find here in this slide. So we have the group of the trauma of the ureters, in particular the tear of traumatic tear of ureters, ureteral obstructions, and then the big group of congenital abnormalities. The ureteral trauma in general is uncommon reported in veterinary medicine, and when it occurs is most often iatrogenic. For example, it is associated with ovariohysterectomy procedures, or can be secondary to blunt trauma, which can cause in particular tearing, rupture of the ureter itself. If we think about for just a second to the ovariohysterectomy associated ureteral injury, this may be secondary to inadvertent ligation, transection, resection, or also from obstruction secondary to postoperative granuloma formation. Several cases of ureteral damage secondary to blunt trauma have been reported. The blunt trauma might result in ureteral tearing, as you can see in this slide, or crushing injury with subsequent obstruction and therefore hydronephrosis. When we have a tear or rupture, as you can see in these two images, but also in the next slide, you see this is a bilateral ureteral tear. The first or the most common sign that you might find is uroperitoneum or uroretroperitoneum. Obviously, the diagnosis in these cases is, let me see if I can exactly, is made because you find free abdominal effusion, which you will tap under, possibly under ultrasound control, and then you will check in these patients the levels of creatinine and potassium within the abdominal effusion, and you will compare these levels with those in the serum. When you have the levels of crea and potassium much higher than the ones in the effusion compared to the serum, then you you can do a diagnosis of uroperitoneum or uroretroperitoneum. Obviously, there are other, this is the first step, and then you can proceed to do, like in these cases that I'm showing you, an excretory urography, so injecting intravenous contrast to see if there is a leak from the ureters in the abdominal cavity. This is a very useful diagnostic workup and procedure, which gives you an immediate answer, but you need to keep in mind that these patients need to be rehydrated and stabilized, because IV contrast administration to dehydrated patients may result in further renal injury and may be difficult. The interpretation of the radiographs may be difficult because of poor renal or ureteral opacification. So first of all, rehydration and stabilization, and then contrast IVU. So, if we are dealing with a ureteral tear, what shall we do? So, the options are different depending on the experience of the surgeon and on the also equipment that we have in our practice. So, basically, you could attempt to reimplant the ureter. But you need to keep in mind that reimplantation or reconstruction, as you can see here, urethral anastomosis, they might land in the development of stricture or stenosis, leading to hydronephrosis and then a non-functional kidney. So if we are planning to reimplant or to do an anastomosis of the urethral stumps, then we might also need to consider that we might need to place a stent to just to avoid a possible complication of urethral stricture, urethral stenosis. Keep in mind, cats' ureters are very, very, very thin. So reconstruction is, I would say, let's say, very difficult, and complications are really very frequent. So in those cases, probably the best way to proceed if we want to save the kidney is to apply to position a subcutaneous urethral bypass, which is a device which bypasses, as the word itself says, bypasses the ureter and permits to save the kidney. But this is something that we will discuss further ahead in this presentation. And then there is the last option, which I'm very not very happy about it, which is removal of the kidney, removal of the ureter, the torn ureter. This can be done if the contralateral kidney is healthy and working, but if both ureters are compromised, like in this case, you can imagine that it's not possible to remove both kidneys. So this patient either is a candidate for euthanasia or, as I would go for, is a candidate for reconstruction of the ureters. Then we have the big group of the ureteralectopia. Ureteralectopia is a congenital malformation where the ureters, instead of opening in the right position at the level of the trigone, just do open in an abnormal position, which is usually further caudal, beyond the trigone, either in the urethra or in the uterus, vagina, cervix. The ectopic ureters are the most common cause of urinary incontinence, mainly in juvenile female dogs. They are classified, as you know from the vet school, into two different groups, as intramural or extramural. With the intramural ureters tunneling within the thickness of the urinary bladder wall, and over 95% of the reported ectopic ureters is intramural. So the most frequent abnormality in the ureteralectopia results to be intramural. When you have ureteralectopia, the ectopic orifice of the ureter is usually larger than the normal ureter or vesicle junction. And in some occasions, mainly in male dogs, because we have ectopic ureters also in male dogs, despite the higher rate or in females. So if we have a stenotic uretero-vesical junction, then this leads to the distension of the ureter, which is called hydroureter, and hydronephrosis, so distension of the kidney, so opilectasia. And sometimes you can see also uretrosil. And as I have mentioned, this is more common in male dogs, in particular Labrador retrievers. And important to underline the fact that in male dogs, the ectopic ureters might not be symptomatic for a while. So it's very frequent to, it happens to us to see male dogs that have been normal their entire life, and then around 6, 7, 8, or 9 years, when they are 9 years old, they start to be incontinent. This is due to the fact that male dogs have a longer urethra, which is also contributing to maintain continence compared to female dogs where the urethra is shorter. So basically, comparing male to female dog with ectopic ureters, you have young female dogs who are incontinent since they are very young, in a younger age, so 3, 4, 6 months, 2 months, whilst male dogs are urinary continent and they develop the incontinence at some point in their life when they are adult animals. So this is to mention again to the two different groups of ectopic ureters. The most frequent one is the intramural, where you can see the ureter entering the urinary bladder and tunneling within the thickness of the wall of the urinary bladder, and then opening at some point along the urethra or along the, sorry, the urinary bladder neck or proximal urethra, and you can see here an intra-surgical image when you open the urinary bladder. You make the incision on the ventral surface of the urinary bladder, and along the dorsal wall of the bladder, you can see the large tunnel of one intramural ectopic ureter. Then you have the extramural ectopic ureter, where the ureter just bypasses the trigone and joins either the urethra in males, very rare, or joins the cervix, the vagina, in females. Why I'm underlying the difference between intramural and extramural? Because the surgical technique that you use to correct the two different kind of ureteral ectopia is different. So when you have an extramural ectopic ureter, you just have to transect the abnormal ureter, close with stitches the terminal stump, and then reimplant the ureter within the urinary bladder in a position which is cranial to the trigone zone. Okay, whilst I'm going back one slide, if we have an intramural ectopic ureter, you don't have to transect the abnormal ureter. You just need to reconstruct the opening in a more physiological position, again, cranial to the trigone. Okay, and in case of intramural, if you do it surgically, but we will see that there are other surgical technique to address intramural ectopic ureters, you recreate a neo-ureterocystostomy, so the stoma, there is a new stoma here, and then you have to ligate the distal segment of the intramural ureter, or in some cases you can also remove the residual tunnel here, because if you don't do that, you might have your opening, the new opening here in the cranial to the trigone, might you might and you might man, one man, you maintain the tunnel, then you will still have an incontinent dog. So the distal segment of the intramural ectopic ureter needs to be either removed or ligated so that there is no further passage of urine. So now If we have a patient with ectopic ureters, there are also concurrent urinary bladder and urethral functional anomalies, such as, for example, the incompetence of the urethral sphincter mechanism, which is reported in 75 to 89% of the female dogs with ectopic ureters. In males is less common, but is also present. We do some, in some cases, we do diagnose USMI also in male dogs. But again, because in male dogs the urethra is longer, so there is a longer muscular component, so the incontinence because of the incompetence of the urethral mechanism is less frequent. Other abnormalities are urinary tract infection associated to ectopic urethra, 65 to 85%. We might have in female the persistency or the persistent paramesonephric septal remnants. We will see it later on. 90% of the female dogs with ectopic ureters have the persistence of the septal remnants. We are talking about the vagina. In the vagina, there is a septum which persists, and this is this causes urinary pooling and a recurrent UTI. Again, females might have a short urethra in 20% of the females with ectopic ureters, and we talk about short urethra when the urethra is shorter than 5 centimeters. And then we can also have renal dysplasia and renal agenesia in general in 10% and 5% respectively of the cases. In male dogs, as we have already mentioned, we may have a distension of the ureter and distension of the renal pelvis in over 90% of the male dogs with ectopic ureters. Keep in mind, dogs with ectopic ureter should have routine urine cultures throughout their lives as they have an increased risk of recurrent UTI. There are different methods to surgically correct problems related to the ureters. In most of the cases includes laparotomy, so exploration of the abdomen, and cystotomy. In some cases, we will see it later, if we are talking about ureteral obstruction, we might also need to do ureterotomy, so incision of the ureter. The point I would like to underline here is that the complication rate with surgery of the ureters, and now we are talking about ectopic ureters, varies between 16 and 50%, with 25 to 50% of the reimplanted dogs develop or the hydroureter get worse, or the hydronephrosis get worse. 14% of the reimplanted dogs develop uroabdomen. And then another point to underline is that if we do correct the ectopic ureters, we still need to keep in mind that unfortunately it's still very high, the percentage of recurrent persistent incontinence. So the rate of post-operative continence is between 25 and 70% in female dogs and 70 to 80% in male dogs, which means that you have, if you look at the females, you have still a high percentage of incontinent dogs after the surgery, because the surgery might fail, because we might do some mistakes in the correction, or because maybe there is a short urethra or USMI. Okay, so because the surgery of ectopic ureters, I'm talking about the intramural ectopic ureters. The surgery of ectopic ureters in general has complication, and we have seen it. If we have extramural ectopic ureters, we don't have a choice. We have to correct these ureters surgically. So we have to open the abdomen, transect the ectopic, the extramural ectopic ureter, and reimplant it in a more cranial position before the trigone. Surgery is necessary. If we are talking about intramural ureters, we can correct the intramural ectopia surgically, so opening the urinary bladder and creating a new stoma within the urinary bladder, which is again open surgery, or we can opt to go with something more conservative, which is the ablation with a laser under cystoscopic control, which is called, as you can see in this slide, CLA-EU. So cystoscopic laser ablation of the ectopic ureters. This provides a minimal invasive alternative to surgery in dogs with intramural ectopic ureters only. The ectopic ureter must be intramural to be able to use this technique. So if we do the cystoscopy, so with the cystoscopy we can make our diagnosis of ectopic ureters. If we are lucky and we have fluoroscopy, we can also do contrast of the ureters and also define if these ureters are intramural or not. So the cystoscopy helps and can directly visualize the ureter ovocecal junction. And also the cystoscopy allows you to verify if there are concurrent anomalies like the vaginal septal remnants or a short urethra or hypoplastic bladder, either ureters, either nephrosis. Once you have done your diagnosis, at the same time you can, if you have the laser, you can use the laser to ablate the medial wall of the intramural ectopic ureter up to the trigone. So you just open the medial wall of the tunnel, which is the intramural ectopic ureter, until you reach up to the trigone. This is the place where you stop with a laser to cut the ureter. And in this way, you create a new opening in a more physiological region. And at the same time, you eliminate the residual tunneling segment. So now everything is beautiful, surgery is wonderful, or laser ablation is wonderful, but what is important is the patient preparation and the workup before approaching urethral surgery. So prior to considering urethral surgery, we need a full, a complete diagnostic workup, which includes full blood work, abdominal ultrasonography, radiographs, or if we can economically, if there is the financial option, CTIVU is a very good way to have a fast, quick diagnosis. Urine analysis is fundamental, and urine culture. And then, again, if we are lucky, we have a cystoscope, we can do cystoscopy. In some of these cases, mainly the ones that have an ureteral obstruction because of urolysis, we might need to measure also the blood pressure. If we are thinking about an obstruction in the ureter, probably we will have a combination of renal pelvic distension, hydronephrosis, and we say that the pelvis is distended when it's more than 2 millimeters in diameter, and we will also have a distended ureter cranial to the obstruction. So you can see here in this ultrasound, you see, first of all, you see some nephrolyths, and then also here, and you see here the proximal ureter distended. Here should be, at some point there is the obstruction, and here you have the distending ureter. So let's go more in detail. This is a kidney, you see the renal parenchyma, and this is the distended pelvis. Okay. These are all the same kidney. And then here you see the ureter, and then you see in the ureter three ureterolytes, which are causing the obstruction. If you don't find in the ultrasound signs of obstruction, then you might need to consider to do a radiograph. And you see in this radiograph, because the ureterolytes are you can, if they are radio opaque, you can see them very easily. You see here, 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 here. Okay, so you can find the location, the size, the number, and shape. The sensitivity for abdominal radiograph for feline urethral calculi is documented to be 81% versus in dogs where it is 88%. For abdominal ultrasonography in cats is 77%. Is much more difficult in cats to see urolytes, ureterolytes in cats than in dogs, versus 100% in dogs. So in combination, the sensitivity of ultrasound and radiographs is around 90%. So both are usually recommended. Otherwise, you do a CTIVU, so computed tomography and intravenous urography, and you see here, for example, this is a normal kidney, and this is the obstructed kidney. You see that the contrast, you don't see the contrast, and you see here the stone. And this is a reconstruction, this is the normal kidney, and these are the stones, and you see that there is no passage, so this kidney is completely obstructed, the ureter. Or this is another case of ureteral tear. This was a blunt trauma or road traffic accident in a cat. You see here, we have done a CTIVU, and we have contrast which leaks into the abdomen, which tell us, it shows very well where the rupture is of the ureter. So, if we talk about ectopic ureters, then, so yes, ultrasound might be useful. X-ray, plain X-rays, are usually not very useful unless we combine to the plain X-rays a contrast urography. But usually, the best way to go for ectopic ureters is either performing a CTIVU or performing a cystoscopy, or we can combine both. So cystoscopy is 100% accurate for diagnosis of ectopic ureters in female dogs. In females it's very easy, despite you need an experienced operator, and allows concurrent treatment with a laser ablation. And the cystoscopy allows the diagnosis of other abnormalities, which we have already mentioned. The CT scan is more expensive, the anesthesia is longer, and also with an experienced operator, sometimes it can be difficult to make a differential between intramural and extramural ectopia. And the CT is just diagnostic, whilst the cystoscopy is a diagnostic tool, but can also become a treatment tool, so therapeutic, because we can do the laser ablation under the cystoscopic So this is an example, a CTIVU. You see distension of the renal pelvis, you see the ureter on one side, and this is on the other side. There is distension. This is a dog with ectopics. Ectopics, and we see it here, right ureter and left ureter. So, where is my arrow here? If we read the legenda here, this is the right ureter, and which is identified by the red arrows. And you can see that the ureter is bypassing completely the urinary bladder, which is this, and bypasses the trigone, obviously. And the green arrow, this, is indicating the point where the ureter is joining the vaginal vestibule. And if you look also better, you can also see the blue arrow is indicating the vaginal septum, which is persistent. So this is clearly, seems to be clearly an ectopic, extramural ectopic ureter, right side. The left side, again, red arrows indicate the left ureter. The green arrow show somehow the communication. So this is the bladder. And you see that this ureter seems to run within the thickness of the urinary bladder and then opening distally into the urethra. In fact, it's a purple arrow, urethra, pink is vaginal vestibule. So now here there was a doubt from the imager if this left ureter was intramural or extramural. Again, right ureter, red, bypassing the urinary bladder, entering the vaginal vestibule. Clearly ectopic and extramural. Whilst the left runs here towards the urinary bladder, but at this level, it's not very easy to say if this ureter is intramural or extramural. You can follow it. It goes into the urethra and then you see the contrast going out. So the doubt here is if this ureter is extramural or intramural. The imager pointing at this level with a cyan arrow says that this is an extra mural ectopic ureter. So basically it went in for exploration, and in the reality that ureter, the left one, was intramural. And you see it here. The right one was extramural, I have re-implanted, but the left was intramural. And you see it, I think, in the next image with the urethral. So this is a ventral cystotomy, and this was the intramural portion of the ureters, and I have opened the tunnel and recreated the openings. So this is to say that the CT IVU sometimes can be misleading. So what I do now, I do CT and then cystoscopy just to be 200% sure about the diagnosis. If you are lucky, like in New York, for example, there is a center at the American Medical Center where they have all this equipment, so it's much easier. You have fluoroscopy, you have endoscopy, so you can do everything at the same time. So you do cystoscopy, you do the contrast study under cystoscopy, and then they correct the ectopic ureters intramural with a laser ablation in one go. So you need some equipment, in particular the laser. And this is what I was mentioning regarding the images that you, when you do the cystoscopy, okay? So now we have the animal in dorsal recumbency, and you have, usually you have the urethral meatus, which is this, the blue one, and then dorsal to the urethral meatus, so the legs are up here, and here is the back, so if the dog is lying on his back, so dorsal recumbency. In your cystoscopy, you find your urethral meatus, which is anatomically ventral to the vagina, but because the dog is in dorsal recumbency, you have the urethral meatus dorsal in your image, and ventral to it you have the vagina, which usually is one single hole, which is not the case here. So you see there is a membrane dividing the vagina in two portions. This is called persistent paramesonephric remnant, or PPMR, and it It's called like that if it extends for less than 1 centimeters cranially in the vagina from the vestibulovaginal junction. The name changes and becomes vaginal septum if it extends more than 1 centimeter but stops prior to the cervix, and it becomes a bifid vagina or dual vagina when the septum extends from the vestibulovaginal junction to the cervix, splitting the vagina into separate compartments. It's just a matter of names, okay? Why is important this? Because it seems that this septum is pulling down, you see, actually dorsally, is pulling dorsally the urethral meatus and might contribute to further incontinence after the correction of the ureters. So that's why if we have the laser, we just cut it and separate the septum. And also it might be cause of urinary pooling, which is again cause of UTI. Again, you see this. This is a persistent hymen, like in women. So urethral meatus, and here is the vagina. And this is the hymen. It's very thin, then you just need to cut it, and you do it with a laser. And if you separate it, then you see this pulling dorsally is addressed, and the urethral meatus would appear more relaxed and less tense. This is an image where you see, with me, an image where you see the, this is the all the urethral lumen. This is the trigone, and then you see this opening, which is an opening of an ectopic ureter, and this ureter is intramural, and there is another opening here of a second intramural ureter. Again, cystoscopy, vaginoscopy, urethral meatus, and then so this is the vagina with the remnant of the septum, and here is the ectopic ureter, which is opening into the vaginal vestibule. Probably this one is an extramural ectopic ureter. Same story here, urethral opening, less evident, but urethral opening, and then you have two ectopic ureters. Again, we are at the level of the proximal urethra, and probably these two ureters are intramural. Okay. So, again, back to the surgery of the ureters. So we said this, there is a high incidence for complications, and one of these is the development of uroabdomen because of urine leakage from the ureteral incision or ureteral implantation. And you can see this is one of our cases after bilateral implantation of two extramural ectopic ureters. And this is a retro uroperitoneum. Okay, which obviously needed revision. The second most common complication is ureteral obstruction, which is described in 5% of the cats treated with ureterotomy and 11% of the cats treated with neo-ureterocystostomy for ureterolithiasis. So, which is the aim when we do surgery on the ureters? We need to regain the anatomofunctional integrity. We want the luminal purity, and we want to save the kidney. Kidneys, in the past, kidneys were removed very easily. So I'm very respectful for kidneys, and I try to save them at any cost. So when we are dealing with ureters, then we can do a ureterostomy. So we might need to remove a part of the ureter and reconstructed with an anastomosis. Remember, this kind of surgery might need a stent. Or you can recreate a new ureterovesical junction, so it's called ureteroneocystostomy, so reimplantation of the distal ureter in the bladder after resection of the distal ureteral portion or renal. You can make an incision in the ureter to remove a ureterolith, ureterotomy. Again, in dogs, maybe yes, we can do it. In cats, I would really avoid to do that. Then we move towards the ureteral stenting, the use of SUB, which is the short name for subcutaneous ureteral bypass, which we will see later. And then last is the nephrectomy, ureteral nephrectomy, which I was saying is really, really the last resources, because I always try to save the kidney. Cases like this one, the tear of this ureter, are challenging because the rupture is proximal, so you don't have much length of the ureter to reconstruct or to reimplant into the urinary bladder. And this was a cat, so this might require some experience to do this kind of surgery, and knowing the possible potential complication in cats and reconstruction of the ureters and stenosis and blockage, in this cat, for example, I decided to save the kidney using a subcutaneous ureteral bypass, and I will show you later how we did it. So any ureteral surgery may cause stricture at the surgical site. I'm really emphasizing this because of the dimension of the ureter, especially in cats and small dogs. Because the lumen is very, very, very thin, this is the main factor that predisposes to stricture formation. The passage of ureterolith may cause mucosal injury and subsequently stricture in the future. And there can be excessive tension after the ureteral anastomosis and excessive tissue trauma during surgery. So the most substantial risk with ureteral intervention is the operating, having appropriate training and experience and appropriate equipment. Going back to the stabilization, this was a cat with ureteral tear. And you see, if you do some bloods, because she has a retro-uroperitoneum, she was badly hyperkalemic. This is the potassium in her blood, and this is the creatinine and the urocreatinine in her blood. So the creatinine is out of range, so it's not even measurable, and creatinine is very high. So And these were much, much, much higher, compared to the concentration in the blood. So she had a ureteroneum and she had an avulsion of the ureter. Actually, the kidney was avulsed. And the important things are looking at the potassium. Obviously, you see the cat is connected to an ECG, is because hyperpotassemia, hyperkalemia is a cause of bradycardia and cardiac arrest. Okay? So I need to keep this in mind. Instrumentation is very important if you want to do surgery of the ureters. Fine instruments are fundamental. You might need a loop for surgery for magnification. You need a delicate and atraumatic surgery technique. You need to preserve the urethral blood supply. You need to have the adequate suture material, very thin. We are talking about 5.0 or 8.0. Absorbable monofilament suture material. You might need implants such as stents, subs, for example, and you will need a fluoroscopy if you want to do stenting or placing a sub. You need patience, precision, monitoring, and ready to deal with millions of complications. And this kind of surgery can become expensive. The urethral obstructions, I want to go a bit more in detail with this because I haven't mentioned this is the third group, is a very major clinical problem in our patients and is most commonly associated with ureterolithiasis, urethral strictures and trigonal neoplasia at the level of the ureterovesical junction. And the series of physiological events that occurs during urethral obstructions might be complex. That's why you need to select your patient and stabilize your patient. The important thing is, in general, when there is a obstruction of the urethral obstruction, there is a reduction of the renal blood flow. Down to 40% of the normal in the first 24 hours. And this, the blood flow to the kidney continues to decrease to 20% of the normal within 2 weeks. This makes surgery for ureteral obstruction an emergency. The longer the duration of the ureteral obstruction, the less likely that kidney will recover. So let's have a look at this. In normal dogs, after 1 week of complete obstruction, glomerular filtration rates return to 65% of control values in 1 month. 1 month. But after only 2 weeks of complete obstruction, glomerular filtration rate returns to only 46% of initial function over 4 months. So, no definitive prognostications can be made regarding dogs and cats with bilateral renal disease and ureteral obstruction secondary to ureterolithiasis. So when you have a ureteral obstruction, this, as I was mentioning, becomes something pretty urgent to be that need to be addressed. The obstruction can be extraluminal, there is something outside in the abdomen which is obstructing, can be intraparietal, something in the wall of the ureter, like a tumor, or can be intramural, like in most of the cases, ureterolates. So 80% of the intraluminal obstructions are represented by ureterolithiasis, as I showed you already this image. But there are other causes of ureteral obstruction, like, I don't know if you ever heard about the circumcaval ureter. So there is a malformation where the cava overrides the ureter. The ureters are retroperitoneal, and the cava is on the right side, and the right ureter might be obstructed because the cava is lying over it. And this is mostly common seen in cats. Look, 70% of ureteral obstruction in cats. So you need to know that these things exist, otherwise you cannot make your diagnosis. There are cases, very rare, of left-sided circumcaval ureters. So this is the typical complications after an ovariohysterectomy, so where the ligation has caused an extraluminal obstruction. So you see the stenosis, the fibrotic ureters, and the distension of the kidney. Kidney is full of pus. Clearly, we cannot save this kidney, and ureteronephrectomy has been done. This is another one, okay? You can see exactly where the ligation usually is at this level, in the proximal third of the ureter, exactly where the ligature of the ovary is placed. Okay, very bad. So make sure when you do your ovariohysterectomy that you do not trap your ureter in the ligature, even though this can also happen. This was the ligature, but sometimes the obstruction can happen because the formation of a granuloma at the level of the ovariohysterectomy. This is another kind of obstruction, extraluminal cava, right kidney, ureter, and then you see these are para-aortic lymph nodes, which are very enlarged, and they are trapping the ureter, obstructing it. And this was actually a dog with metastasis of seminoma. So you see, this is the testicle, and these are all the lymph nodes metastatic, compromising the patency of the ureter. If you don't see a clear obstruction with your diagnostic, which means ultrasound or radiography, then the cause is most commonly a ureteral stricture in 25% of the cats, can be dry solidified blood stones in 80% of the cat, or a tumor. Here, for example, this case is a cat that has been spayed like a year before. You see the kidney, really a thin capsule, severe hydronephrosis, and you see the bladder, and you see this is the ureter, and then, I don't know if you can see properly, but there was like a fibrotic tissue occluding the ureter. So I haven't removed this kidney. I tried to save it with a sub, and it's working currently. There are some papers about feline ureteral strictures, what to do, which is the prognosis, and basically the conclusion is that ureteral strictures may occur in cats secondary to ureteral surgery, inflammation, circumcaval ureter impacted, ureterolithiasis, or for unknown causes. This is another step further. I'm giving you loads of information. This is another diagnostic tool, which is called pyelography. It means injection of contrast in the renal pelvis to localize the at which level we have an obstruction. You can do this under ultrasound control, and then you take an X-ray, or you can do it, this was a cat having a sub, and you can do it during surgery with a CR. And you see here clearly the distension of the pelvis and the ureter, and then stop. And here also distension of the pelvis, distension of the proximal ureter, and then at some point stop here. This is not very. So if we have ureteral calculi, for example, in cats, this is a bit a pain, because in the past we have said ureterotomy, so incision of the ureter and removal of the calculi, is something that we do not recommend. So the alternative with ureteral calculi, which can lead to ureteral obstruction, partial or complete, the options that you have is either ureteral stenting or placing a sub. But before doing that, you need to stabilize the cat, and you need to try to disobstruct. So you need to give some medications, like fluids, obviously, 24-48 hours, at 5 to 7 milliliter per kilogram per hour. You can give some alpha-adrenergic blockage medication to relax the ureteral muscles, like prazosin, and you see the dosage here reported. You need to monitor blood pressure with prazosin, because the prazosin is also a medication to control the blood pressure. If you can also think about if the cat is well hydrated, then you can think about to administer some diuretic therapy like mannitol in constant rate infusion for no more than 24 hours. If all this doesn't work, because you will obviously check the renal pelvis size, the urine creatinine, if this doesn't work, then you need to think about to address the obstruction surgically, either with a stent or with a sub. Look that most of these cases have also some heart condition, so do not overflow them with fluids. If there are no stones seen and a stricture is suspected, then the benefit of the treatment that I have just mentioned is of low yield. Broad spectrum antibiotic therapy should also be considered, as up to 34% of cats and 77% of dogs are reported to have positive culture, urine culture, preoperatively in case of obstructions. No, this is not very relevant. So, these are the surgery options that you have. Ureterotomy, again, in cats, not very recommended. In dogs, yes, it might work well. Urethral stenting in dogs, female dogs, can be done easily under cystoscopy. In male dogs, yes, can be done with cystoscopy, but it's a bit more complicated, or you go with open surgery, and then you have the placement of subcutaneous urethral bypass. The urethral stenting comes from the human medicine, and they stent human patients since 1976, whilst in medicine they started in 2006 in the United States. The stents have, as you can see here, are like rubber tubes with a double pigtail tip. One pigtail loop goes into the renal pelvis and the second one goes in the urinary bladder. The pigtail is useful because it avoids the migration of the stent out of the kidney of the urinary bladder. You see there are multiple fenestrations, so the urine, which is collected in the renal pelvis, is collected and goes through the stent via these holes, but also around the stent. Okay, but obviously if we have an obstruction like a stone, the passage of urine is the one that goes into the lumen of the stent via these holes, fenestrations. We have said this. Okay, this for example is an image in a human patient. Okay, how a stent looks like in the kidney, the pigtail in the kidney and the urinary bladder. You see it here in this drawing. And this is obviously a patient that is not living anymore. And you see here the indications of when you should stent a patient. Okay, you have urethral leads, you can have neoplastic obstruction. For example, if you have a neoplasia at the level of the trigone where the urethrovesical junction is obstructed, you can stent this patient. Palliative, obviously, but this helps to relieve the obstruction. Trauma, when you reconstruct the ureters, you can use a stent. Anastomosis, ureteroneocystostomy. Which is the problem? That you see, these are the stones that you might find within a ureter. So the stent can crustify, and means all the minerals of the crystals can obstruct the stent, which means at some point needs to be removed. In human beings, it is changed regularly. In dogs and cats, it has been seen that the stent remains patent for long periods. So, talking about cats, we said in dogs, stenting is still a very good option. Actually, is the optimal option. In cats, it has been seen that because of the positioning of the ureterovesical junction at the level of the trigone, if we have a pigtail tip at the level of the trigone, this is irritant and is the cause of cystitis. So, which is sterile. So, they have seen in retrospective studies that signs consistent with sterile cystitis affected 35% of the cats. And this is why they move the now the state of the art is in cats, we do prefer to place subs instead of stenting, whilst in dogs the stenting is still the best way to go. As I was saying, the stent can encrust, so you can imagine if you have something like that in your kidney and ureter, this won't work much, and that's why in human beings it is exchange, if a human being has a stent, they exchange every 3 to 12 months until the obstruction has resolved. In our patient, this is not necessary yet. If the obstruction resolves, mainly in female dogs, then we can remove the stent via cystoscopy. The stent can break, so it's called fragmentation, stenturia, so you find pieces of stent into the urinary bladder. And obviously, if it's like that, also the infections are another risk of for complications. So I don't want to go into the specific of the measurements and length. So this is a dog with a bilateral stent. This is again the one that I showed you at the beginning. And this dog, at the time I didn't have an endoscopy, a cystoscopy, so, and the dog was very tiny. So I did it surgically with a CR. So you see the two pigtails, one in the pelvic, in the renal pelvis bilaterally, and the two pigtails in the urinary bladder. So, no, this is a case that I'd like is interesting, but I think we need to, because we are a bit late, I wanted to show you the sub. So the sub is the alternative to the stenting in case of ureteral obstruction in cats, or also I've used the sub to bypass the ureter in case of ureteral tear in the cat. I show you the CT IVU before. And the subcutaneous ureteral bypass is a combination of a locking loop nephrostomy tube. So you have a tube with again a pigtail tip that goes into the renal pelvis, which is usually distended because there is an obstruction. This tube goes, so the pigtail in the kidney, so this is a nephrostomy tube. The nephrostomy tube connects to a titanium port. This titanium port is placed subcutaneously, suture to the abdominal wall, and again is bond to another tube, which is called the cystostomy tube, which goes into the urinary bladder. So basically what happens, the urine produced in the kidney goes into the nephrostomy tube, into the port, into the cystostomy tube, into the urinary bladder, bypassing the affected ureter. The sub is sold in a kit, so everything is included in the kit. And so, for example, let's see this case. You see, this is the one I show you with a ruptured ureter. This is an urinoma. You don't see, it's a retroperitoneum. And we did the CTIVU, I show you already. Rupture. So here the options were, we can try to reconstruct this ureter and try to do a neo-ureterocystostomy, but the complication rate is very high. Or we remove the kidney. The kidney is healthy. It was a road traffic accident. The cat was young. So I didn't want to do that. And then I say, okay, let's save the kidney. I ligated the stump of the ureter proximal and distally, and then I've placed a sub, and then I show you. I hope I show you here. So basically, you have the kidney, you have the nephrostomy tube going into the kidney at the level of the caudal pole, and then you have the cystostomy tube going into the urinary bladder at the level of the apex. And then these tubings go through the abdominal wall in the subcutaneous space where we create a pocket, and they connect to the subcutaneous titanium port, which is sutured to the abdominal wall. Again, you see it here. Pigtail into the kidney, goes into the port, goes into the cystostomy tube. This is an implant. It's very comfortable. They have no pain. They tolerate it very well. And what you do when you have this port, you use the port to collect urine. So there is a special needle that you use. It's called a Huber needle, which is this. And this needle goes through the skin into the port, because the port is, again, sutured to the abdominal wall on the flank. And then you can collect urine samples for urine culture and urine analysis. But most important, you have to flush the system, because obviously the crystals and the sediment can block the system. So the flushing of the system is done every 3 months for the first 2 years, and then every 6 months. Obviously, SUPs can also have complications, like for example this one. This one, you see the port has moved in a different position, and then we have a kink here, so it's not working anymore. And this is exactly the nephrostomy tube, if you follow the tube. So basically, it's again like having an obstruction, so this needs to be readdressed. Or, for example, here is the nephrostomy tube is here and is detached from the port. So, and can also dislodge. Or there have had patients with encrustation where the nephrostomy tube was completely obstructed from the crystals, from the sediment, so I had to exchange it. Or this is one where the nephrostomy tube slipped out of the kidney, and then we had a uroperitoneum and needed a surgery revision. So I think I have given you many information. So I think what you should take home is obviously that there are different surgical techniques to address ureteral issues. But what is important is the selection of the patient, the precise assessment of the patient. And please try to preserve the kidney. It's never too late. Even if we can regain the 5% of the function of a kidney in a cat, mainly in cats, this is good because of the predisposition of these animals to lose the renal function. And this patient needs careful monitoring, obviously. I think I'm done now, so I hope everything was clear, but if there is any doubt, please feel free to ask me a question. So I'm happy to reply if it's not too late. So I have a question here regarding where to get the stents and the subs. So there are obviously these are products that come from the stents come mainly from the United States, and there is a company called Infinity. So Infinity Medical does stents for veterinary patients in different size and lengths. I have used in the past, because they sell a package of 5 stents of the same measure. So in the past, I have used also human stents. So I had some connections, but it was not here. It was in Europe, where stents for human beings that could not be used anymore were passed to us for stenting. The SUP is produced by Norfolk Veterinary Products, so it's easy to get a SUP. But again, surgery for subs should be done if you have some experience, or maybe you can ask to assist to this kind of surgery. Okay. Question about the costs. Let's say stenting a dog with cystoscopy under cystoscopic control, it should be around like £2,000, £2,500 plus VAT. Subs, the subs itself cost like £400. So a surgery for a sub, for placement of a sub, is around usually £3,000 plus VAT, including 2 or 3 days of hospitalization. Because these cats are renal patients, obviously they need to be really strictly monitored, and so we do loads of bloods, and so this estimation of 3,000 can become a bit more expensive. Any other questions?
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Daniela for an excellent presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.